Welcome to the Making After School Cool podcast, the connection between research, theory, and practice for after school and out of school time programs. This podcast is produced by Case for Kids, a division of Harris County Department of Education, and I'm your host, Michael Wilson. Recently, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Jerry Wallace, Assistant Dean of College and Public Service at the University of Houston Downtown, to discuss ways post-secondary institutions can work with community organizations to effectively engage marginalized students and encourage them to enroll in college and stay until completion. The following is the first part of a two-part interview with Dr. Wallace. The topic for today's podcast is how post-secondary institutions can collaborate with community organizations, school districts, nonprofits, after-school programs, church groups, neighborhoods, and so on to increase the enrollment and completion rate, especially of marginalized groups. I'm speaking today with Dr. Jerry Wallace, who is the Assistant Dean of College of Public Service at the University of Houston downtown. How are you doing today, Dr. Wallace?
Doing okay, doing all right.
Great. Well, let's start off with you. Can you give us a little bit of background information about yourself and what kind of journey you had to pursue to actually get in this position you're currently in?
I'm originally from small town, Texas, what we call prison town. Have had family members incarcerated. Had a best friend incarcerated. So I've seen the ins and outs of that. When I got to high school, around high school age, we moved to the Conroe area where I finished high school. I'm a first generation college grad, so my mom was real important in my education and trying to get me connected to school. Started out doing dual credit at Lone Star College at the time. It was called Montgomery College then. Didn't want to do dual credit. Wanted to play basketball during the summers. And she said, no, you can still do AAU, but you're going to take these dual credit classes too. And years later, I thank God for it. So that's how I started with higher ed, going into college. And then I initially finished high school at Oak Ridge High School, and then I went to Grambling State. So Grambling was on my list because I had an opportunity to go play basketball. Got there, didn't like it. I felt like it was too small, the culture was too small, it was a slow-moving community, the students were not prepared, and the high school I went to, we were all about academics, and, you know, because it led to success in career, and you know, I knew that going in, and I just didn't fit at Grambling. Wanted the black college experience, and it didn't really provide it for me. And it's interesting because moving as a teenager, I went from two different communities. So I went from a black rural country community to a rich white community when I got to high school. And I saw the difference in lifestyle. I saw the difference of kids whose parents went to college. My junior year in high school, I'll backtrack real quick, but my junior year in high school, we had our annual basketball party, and one of our buddies at his house in the Woodlands. I had never been that deep in the Woodlands before, so we drive in the Woodlands, and next thing you know, we going through gated neighborhoods, and my mom is like, you know, are we in the right place?
Right.
And I was like, I guess, you know, I'm following the directions. We pull up to the house. And his dad, you know, teammate's dad opens the door. He got pizzas in his hand. Come on in. The guys are in the back. So we go in this house. I mean, they got a pool in the backyard with a waterfall. The pool changed colors. I mean, he playing Sega Genesis in one room, Nintendo in another room. And I'm sitting here like, man, I've been playing basketball with this kid all this time and never knew they lived like this. And I think I had an epiphany that day because I knew both his parents went to college. And I was like, this is how I want to live. This is what I want. And I couldn't articulate that as a 17-year-old, but I knew there was something that he had that I'm supposed to have. And years later, of course, as I go through college, I realized it was education. Mm-hmm. I realized that was the platform to get me where I needed to go. Okay, so go back to Grambling. Transferred to Lamar University when I left Grambling. Lamar was probably where I should have started. Great experience at Lamar. Lamar was a culturally diverse school, so I had all different groups of people at Lamar. Beaumont was just big enough, not too small, not too big, just big enough. And I also got connected with a church there. So I met a pastor there, and his family kind of took me in, and they became like my adopted family. So that really kind of kept me supported in Beaumont, because the two places I felt most comfortable for me was on the basketball court and at church. Mm-hmm. So I knew just that community there, you know, with Sunday dinners and hanging out with the family, that's what I needed. And that kept me grounded at Lamar. Basketball didn't work out when I got to Lamar. I tore my ACL. So I had to figure out what to do now. Basketball is over with. What do you do? So I got involved on campus. I met some mentors there. Actually, my first mentor was a white male. Met him through playing basketball. He was actually the vice president of students. Didn't know who he was at the time. He introduced himself to me. Months passed. We developed this relationship, and then he introduces me to all the other black male leaders on campus. So I would eventually meet another vice president who was black, and then a provost who was black. And I got connected on campus my senior year in high school, senior year in college. I actually become homecoming king because I got involved in stuff, met my wife in college. I stayed at Lamar, graduated with a degree in graphic design, continued, got a master's degree in supervision. And then years later, I went back and got my doctorate from Lamar because they, you know, my transcript was there, so it was easy to not have to go through that process, even though I had got accepted to other schools. But it really helped for me to stay in that community. That community really supported me in Beaumont. Mm-hmm. My transition into higher education was working in the student activity center first, and doing graphic and web design for the school. Then I worked in Res Life, housing. Then I went over into academic advising, worked in club recreational sports, coached basketball for a little while. Then I moved and came to Houston. And then I was at San Jacinto College, where I was doing academic advising and also working with sports there, with men's baseball, women's basketball, taught a couple courses, did the Minority Male Initiative programs, came to UHD, where I'm at now, was the director of the Male Initiative program, the founding director of their program, got their program off the ground, and then now I'm the assistant dean for the college. Public service, which supports criminal justice, social work, and urban education. So all of these experiences that I've had have really shaped who I have become in supporting my personal mission. I believe that education is not just a space to get a degree, but it is also, for me, an area where I use my ministry, and the ministry of actually supporting men or marginalized groups, essentially to kind of get them on track. I am in a very good space here. I enjoy what I do. I work with good people. At UHD, we are big, but yet small enough to where we all kind of get to engage with each other, and I like the atmosphere of what we're trying to do. So that's just general intro about me and what I do.
Well, you brought up some really interesting points. One was, at an early age, you had the opportunity to be exposed to a lifestyle that you may not have ever experienced before, but it clicked with you. And I'm sure the fact that it was a teen party, there were other students there as well, but that actually lit a light bulb as well as a fire for you that may or may not have done the same for others. Then you also touched on going to one institution and you realized that you didn't fit there, but you didn't stop, and you ended up finding a place that felt more comfortable with you, and also understanding that the importance of future success also aligned with post-secondary education. Can you speak a little bit about the importance of getting students who probably have a limited vision of themselves, exposure to other opportunities, other things, so that they can kind of, at least prior to actually going somewhere, may have some experience on, hey, you know, I really feel comfortable in this type of setting versus that type of setting. And without that vision or that exposure, they wouldn't know that.
That's a great point you mentioned. I think the TRIO and Upward Bound programs that colleges do really help foster that, because had it not been for my involvement with athletics, I would not have had that. And there were only three black males on the basketball team. The rest of the team were white guys. So when we talk about, you know, black or Hispanic students, marginalized groups being exposed to it, it's all about what programs the school, the high schools or junior highs may offer as they're connected to collegiate institutions. So when we look at that, now you're talking about what's going on in the summer, right? And most of families, I'll speak on the black families, at least where I grew up in the summertime was you playing video games or you outside on the basketball court. Kids don't go outside no more. They really on the video game. But we were outside running around, you know, while mom is at work, dad is at work or whatnot. So I think the things that we can do now as it relates to summer is institutions do summer camps. You know, I see kids now all the time as young as elementary school, 5 and 6 years old, on campus in science camp, on campus in reading camp, walking around with TRIO and Upward Bound programs. That is exposure to institutions. And for families who can't afford that, because some summer camps cost, you'd be surprised how many nonprofit organizations or agencies will cover the cost of the students to attend these camps. An experience I had, my actual first experience in college was fourth grade. I was in Huntsville at the time, and I was a part of the Chicken Club, which was affiliated with Sam Houston State Bearcats. And they had student mentors at the time, college students who mentored elementary school kids. And there was a particular Saturday in the summer where I was going to go and shoot BB guns and run around with the water gun with my cousins. And my mom says, I have to work a double shift today. And I don't want you running around. I'm going to take you up to the college, and you're going to do the Chicken Club thing at the science fair. I remember throwing a fit. I'm 10 years old. It's summertime. I lost my shoe on purpose, couldn't find a sock. And my mom said, that's okay. You're going to get in the car with one shoe on and one sock on, but you're going. Well, she dropped me off at 6 a.m. in the morning at Sam Houston State, and I can tell you, I probably had the best day of my life at that time at 10 years old. I got to milk a cow.
Right.
I got to shear a sheep because, you know, Huntsville is a rural community, and these were students who were majoring in agriculture and farming. So we got to touch animals, which I love animals, and I got to dissect a frog. I'm 10 years old, and I'm doing this on a college campus. So my mom picked me up that afternoon, and, you know, I'm acting like I didn't have a good day. And she was like, so, you know, what you got in your bag? So I was like, I got this, I got this, I got this. She said, oh, so you had a good day. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, I did, you know. But, again, those are opportunities that parents or communities, depending on where you are from, you won't know that these things are taking place. And I think as a collegiate institution, it is our responsibility to go and touch those particular groups to say, how can we expose you to what we're doing as early as possible? Hey, look, I know you guys have, you know, summertime where, you know, you're trying to figure out what to do with your children. You know, you still have to work. Bring them to the college, right? How do we engage with principals and school counselors, again, from elementary school all the way through 12th grade, to say, we want your student to come to our summer camp, right? We're going to make this affordable for you so you can come. And if you have students who continue to do summer camps, brothers and sisters, years and years on, now you have changed the whole dynamic of that family. And another tool around summer camps that, again, families don't know is institutions also will award scholarships to kids early. They'll say, okay, you're in the 10th grade and you're at our summer camp. If you meet these qualifications, which will help you meet at your high school, we're going to have tutoring sessions. We're going to have these after-school programs at our college specifically for students who want to major in certain programs. If you meet these minimum requirements, in 2 years when you're a senior, we're going to give you a scholarship to come to our school. It is another recruitment opportunity to get those students to come to this school, but you also get additional nuggets that they tell you at summer camp that they generally won't tell the general population. So the exposure of a collegiate space, I think summer camp is a real big tool for that. Also, again, TRIO, the Upward Bound programs, they pretty much do the same thing. Getting those from a collegiate standpoint, going back to the communities, to families, and exposing them to that, because we still live in a generation where some parents don't know. Especially when we talk about some of our Hispanic communities where you have parents who were not born in the States, and they may still speak Spanish only, and they're not connected to the resources, right? I've worked with students in Hispanic communities where only the student can speak English, and they're translating back to the parents. So because of that, that family is not exposed to additional resources as it relates to going to college, careers, and development. They will only do what people tell them in high school to do or junior high to do. But again, if universities can connect and start to take the resources they have and push it backwards into those communities, you can actually start to expose students earlier, which will not only get them ready for what college looks like, but it'll also help them prepare for TSI testing, SAT, ACT prep. It'll also give them access to additional scholarships, help them know about financial aid early, help get those parents prepared. It's a domino effect of resources as early as elementary school that you can get exposed to that you know, we're not doing as what we can,
right?
You know, at a collegiate space. But, you know, I go back to that fourth grade experience at Sam Houston State. You know, I, of course, at 10, I didn't know,
right,
that it was going to change my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, it happened at 17. So I keep having these revelations of, you know, opportunities. And for a lot of our marginalized communities, again, depending on what high school you come from or what area of town you live in, you may not get exposed to this information.
Right.
And that's tough.
Yeah. Well, you brought up some interesting points. And I do think that within the course of an individual's life, we do get opportunities to see certain things. And I think that some people have been able to take advantage of those experiences, and others, for whatever particular reason, just have a blind eye towards it and don't necessarily see it. You brought up the importance of having programs to expose youth, especially in the sense to where childhood has changed a lot, probably within the last 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. where 10, 12 years ago, kids just went outside and played. Whereas now, because of technology, because of child safety, because of parents working, a lot of students spend a lot of time indoors. So it's important for community organizations, post-secondary institutions, churches, connect and actually work together and not necessarily work in silos. One of the things you also mentioned was the importance of a mentor or identifying with a person that you can connect with, be it male, female, same ethnic group, different ethnic group, or whatever, but the importance of having someone speak to you or reach to you. Can you elaborate a little bit more on how that can help shift and change the perspective of young people?
Absolutely. You mentioned something very good when you talk about the community connection. And community is not just a place. It is an organization of individuals who support one another. And that community could be in a neighborhood. It could be within a church. It could be a sports team. It could be a job. It could even be people right now who are online connecting now that we have technology. That in itself is a community. And that piece where institutions, depending on the institution, you know, if you have public schools, public institutions, they often don't connect as often as they will with religious faith-based institutions, which that's a very strong community. If you go to, again, when you're talking about African-American and Hispanic communities, For most of them in the United States, they are a faith-based group. So you're going to find people, a huge group of people on church on Sunday, or if you're Catholic on Saturday, they're going to be there. And that is a population of individuals who will assemble that we can touch and provide information to. Now, how does that translate to mentoring? You'd be surprised how many individuals may be at a church or may coach and they're educators, right? They, okay, this person works at the elementary school, they're the principal. This person is assistant principal at the junior high. This person is the dean of a college. And they're in a community, at a church, in a space, and may not even know it, right? So how could those individuals even align themselves to actually help students transition from different spaces, whether they are in a K-12 environment or in a religious space or a particular community in a neighborhood, and they help those individuals move forward to get mentors. So mentoring happens in different forms. Some people develop mentoring organically if they share the same ethnic group or same gender. It could happen organically. Some mentoring is career-based. You know, I'm coming to this person to get career advice. Some mentoring could be career development in the sense I'm trying to move up in my profession. I need to associate myself with a leader who's done it. But for this generation, a lot of the mentoring has to be more of a relationship type of, you know, you speak, I speak. I think sometimes we, as older adults, senior adults, often talk to kids instead of talking with kids, because this generation is you know, so tech savvy, so social media savvy. They communicate by text. They communicate by fingers, and you know, there are times where I could be talking to a student and they're looking at their phone and I think they're not paying attention to me, and I could get upset and be like, "Put your phone down." But the truth is, and I did that to a student. He's like, "Hold on, I'm tweeting what you're saying." Right. You know, I'm putting this on Instagram because you're saying something powerful. I'm like, okay, right. My fault. I said, go ahead and do that, you know?
Yeah.
But I think there is a space where even if there's a generation who may be a little more seasoned, who may not be as social media or tech savvy to communicate, the student is not even really looking for that. They don't care whether you tweet or don't tweet. All they want to know is will you listen?
Right.
Right? Will you take time to hear their problem, their issue, and do your best to try to help them navigate that space? Don't talk to them all day long. You know, don't lecture them. That time has passed. This generation is, you know, quick, short, to the point, right? And how can we do this like right now? You know, and I think that then becomes the mentoring engagement piece. And, you know, it's, they don't care what color you are. This generation does not care. We're in a space now to where race, color, and gender are becoming a very big conversation in a sense of inclusivity. Like, I don't care whether you're gay, you're trans, you're tall, you're short, you're white, you're brown. Hey, let's all go eat lunch together, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's how they think. Whereas just a few generations ago, you would not find someone black and someone white sitting at the same table having lunch. They may be in the same room, may work together, be colleagues, but would never sit at the same table and eat lunch together because, hey, if I have to associate with you outside of my work hours, I'm not going to do that. Whereas this generation of kids, they'll carpool together. They'll catch the train together. They'll eat lunch. They'll share Twitter. They'll follow each other. They do not care what you look like. That's, for them, that's how mentoring should be. They don't care if it's a Hispanic female and you're a black male. If it's a white male and you're a black female, there could be an organic relationship developing to where you can still mentor that student. They just want to know, are you genuine? Do you really care about me? And what are you going to do? It's, you know, I'm the kind of person, I say, let's go do it right now. You know, I was working with a young man, bumped into him in the hallway. He had told me, you know, he's coming from another college, and he said, I'm trying to get my transcripts in. He said, I've turned my transcripts in twice. And they keep telling me X, Y, Z. I said, let's go do it right now. I walked him over. I let him talk because I wanted to empower him, to give him the ability to speak as an adult. So I let him talk, and I said, I'll just reiterate and reinforce what you say. But I want to make sure that you are in control of your own future. Y'all said, so I'm not going to talk for you. I said, but I will usher you in the space. And I think that is another piece of mentoring and empowerment that we have to do, is give them a platform to speak their voice. Because coddling is not going to help them grow. You know, in college, my first mentor was a white male. And he was direct in where we were different. He says, hey, I know I'm white. I know I'm a white male, and I know I come from a privileged background, and I'm not going to identify with you. He said, but I want to connect you to the people who you can identify with. And I was like, that's real. Mm-hmm. I said, that's what's up. I preach. And I follow him to this day. And he speaks from his white male space, and I'm okay with that. And this generation, that's what they want.
Right.
And I think it has to, you know, transition to that, to those spaces. And again, the community engagement is going back to the religious spaces again. I just focus on that space only because I truly believe in my personal journey, you have to have some type of connection to some power or some entity that will help you move forward, because you will go through challenges in this collegiate space. You will go through issues in your family, in your life as a student, even as a mentor while you're trying to connect with students. If they don't see that you're associated with something bigger than yourself, then they can't gravitate to it. And, you know, again, when you're talking about a Hispanic or African-American communities, they still associate with their faith. And those are things you often hear people when they graduate from college. They'll say, oh, I thank God for this. Or if it hadn't been for my mama, or, you know, I prayed for this moment. You know, that tells you that they still associate with their faith as helping them move forward. If you have mentors who can encourage you and guide you in those spaces, again, the person may not even share the same faith-based background. But if that individual says, hey, I'm here with you, you know, I believe in you, or I believe in guiding you forward, just that thing alone will help move that student ahead.
Thank you for listening to the Making After School Cool podcast. This concludes the first portion of my interview with Dr. Wallace. Please join us next week as we continue to explore how post-secondary institutions can work with community agencies to help marginalized students succeed in college.